Coming up, I'm going to tell you what I learned from a president, a coach, and Spanx. And then, why does being a CEO suck and should it? We'll break that down next. Let's go. Welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, here to help you win at work. I want you to have the competitive edge so that you can grow as a person, and that's going to allow you to advance as a professional. And if you keep advancing as a professional, there's probably coming a day where you're going to have to lead. I want you to lead effectively, all so that you make the money that you want to make and experience the meaning that you want to experience. Pretty simple stuff. All right, I'm not confused. I was having a little bit of fun. I'm going to share with you three leadership stories from some of the awesome interviews that I've been able to do over the years. I have a desire to help leaders. Here's why. For the last 6 years, I have been helping workers get happier as a result of figuring out work that they were wired to do. Help them get out of toxic environments, help them thrive to get promoted. And a lot of these problems, except for those who just have no clue what they want to do with their life, a lot of the problems that I'm coaching people through are because of poor leadership. And I love leaders. I don't hate leaders. I'm not one of these people that are going to jump into the social media sphere and make fun of and denigrate leaders. I will call out bad leadership, but we need leaders. A leaderless society is a chaotic society. A leaderless company is a chaotic company. Hello, some of you are working in some chaotic companies and you got some positional leaders, not real leaders. So I want to help leaders because here's what I know. A huge portion of leaders in our work today in America, and this is true around the world, these leaders didn't necessarily say, I want to lead. They just said, I want a promotion. I want a bigger paycheck. And if I got to lead a part of it, I'll suck it up. And they haven't been developed. They haven't been trained. They haven't been mentored. And that's why the world of work has so much stress in it, so much griping, and just people biting a nail to make it through to the weekend. So this is my heart. And I'm coming at this leadership stuff from a perspective of a guy who's talked to people who aren't being led well by the thousands, tens of thousands. So three people, three stories. Let's start with what I learned from a president. He was George W. Bush, and it was a fabulous conversation in front of 5,000 leaders. And one of the questions that I asked him in our hour together is from the research that I had done on him, I found that he was a big nickname giver. So I said to the president, you're known for giving everybody nicknames, Secret Service, from staff to visitors in the Oval Office and beyond. And why do you do that? Is there a method to your madness? Or is that just something you've always done? And this is what he said. He said, here's what I realized pretty quickly upon becoming president of the United States. It immediately changes every conversation. And most of the time when I'm greeting people, they would come to the Oval Office, my staff and new staff that we inherited maybe from previous administrations that were administrative in nature. He said, what I realized is that being the president of the United States is the most powerful position in the world. And there's an intimidation factor there. And he said, I wanted to come down from my position of authority and I wanted to meet them where they were. And the best way that I knew how to do that was a fun, lighthearted nickname because I felt like it put me on their level. I came down to their level and they felt comfortable that as president of the United States, I was giving them a fun nickname. Now, the rest of that story happened before the story started. I remember asking him that question in front of the audience, 5,000 leaders. And when I asked him, why do you give people nicknames? He looked at me and went, well, Slick. And the whole place just went bananas. Very, very funny moment. Very, very quick man. Here's the lesson. even though you are not the president of the United States, you are in a position of authority. And when you start attaching your authority to the fact that people see their livelihood and their ability to provide for themselves or their family to be successful, this is a threatening thing. I don't care how low level of a manager you are. If you have authority over someone, understand that they see you and your displeasure as a potential threat to their livelihood. You need to understand that at a core level. So what does that mean? Bring yourself down to their level. Always, there's the lesson. They already know you have authority. Don't act with that. Treat them like they're real people. Treat them with respect and value them. That's the lesson from President Bush. Second story. I learned from a coach, Coach K, legendary Duke basketball coach, Hall of Famer, five-time national champion. I had the pleasure of interviewing him 20 years ago. And I asked him about how he led different players. He had made the point previously in our conversation about, you know, being a college basketball coach or football coach or any sport in college, because of the rotation, if you will, of seniors and freshmen coming in every new year is a different team. Although you may have some holdovers, it's a very, very different team and a very different chemistry, and you have to coach that team differently. And as a follow-up, I said, how did you lead and coach different players that were very, very unique? And he said, and he went into a longer answer, and this is the nugget I'm going to pull out. He said, well, one of the things we did is that he said, I had a fair but not equal policy. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Tell me what you mean. He said, if we were on the bus and we were about to leave and a senior who was an All-American who had served in the program and had proven themselves, if they were late, I'd wait 2 or 3 minutes for them. I'd give them the benefit of the doubt. But if it was a freshman, I don't care if they were McDonald's All-American, if a freshman was late for 10 seconds, we were gone. He said, that's a fair but not equal. In other words, fairness is based on trust and credibility and what you've earned, and I'm going to treat everyone fairly, but treating a senior one way is fair compared to treating a freshman a very different way. There's different relationship, trust, and equity there. It's not equal. It's fair, but not equal. Not everybody's equal on the same team. And I thought, what a great leadership and parenting lesson. Fair, that's consistent within some principles, a little bit of leeway to make a leadership decision, but certainly not equal. I don't listen. My 18-year-old has different rules than my 15-year-old. Fair, not equal. Fabulous little lesson. Third story. What I learned from Spanx. Now, I was having a little fun with that one. But I had the pleasure of interviewing, who I believe the distinction is correct. If I'm wrong, someone fact check me in there. But I believe Sarah Blakely was the first female billionaire in the United States. If not the first, one of the first. And a very humble lady. I love her story. Many of you may know her story. She came up with the idea for Spanx by cutting out the feet of her hose one day to kind of create a little bit of shall we say, tension underneath one of her pantsuits. And she came up with the idea for a little bit of support on her legs because of what the pantyhose is. So in the moment of need, she innovated, and then she came up with the idea. Well, here's the deal. She shopped the idea all over the place. She got rejected all over the place. She kept going, and the rest of the story is, hello, Spanx is a massive brand, and she's a billionaire. Youngest self-made. Okay, good. Oh, good. That's even better. Youngest self-made billionaire. Okay, so in my interview with her, she shared this story. She said that when she was growing up, her dad, she had siblings, and I can't remember how many, but she said when she was growing up, when they would have family dinner at the end of the day, her father would always bring up at dinner this question. He would ask all of the kids, tell me something you failed at today. Fascinating. I remember when she told me that, I immediately got it. I was like, oh, and I felt so inadequate as a father immediately. You know what I mean? Because we all thought, hey, how was your day today? Good. Okay. You know, tell me something good that happened at school today. Nothing. He would literally go to something that is at the core of our insecurities, right? Our confidence. So, hey, what'd you fail at today? And she said that he would really press him until we told him something that we failed at. Could have been a quiz, a test, could have been a conversation that went wrong, you know, whatever. The idea is he wanted them to talk about the thing that was negative, that was a failure that day. to bring it up, talk about it, because they'd all talk about it, learn from it. But she said, this was the most valuable thing it taught me. It taught me and my siblings not to be afraid of failure. He normalized failure. Oh my gosh, we live in a world today that has made failure almost catastrophic. And as a result, we have the most anxiety-ridden generation we have ever seen in the history of the world. Failure is not final, and it is not fatal. Fabulous stuff. Now, why do I share those things? Three cool people. I'm not name-dropping. That's what I do for a living. But the lesson here is talk to people that are wiser, more successful than you, and ask them a lot of questions. You never know what kind of nugget they're going to drop on you in the form of a story. Hey, leaders, there's three great lessons right there in three stories. Do something with it. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. I don't know about you, but when stuff's going wrong in my personal life, there's no way for me to completely untie that and just walk into the office and be the best professional that I can be. There's just no way. And I've had some times over the last couple years where I didn't believe that I was going to be able to do my show. I didn't think I could get through it. Hey, trust me, therapy is a safe space for me and you to get things off your chest, because there's just some stuff you can't talk about at work with people, even close people, your leader or coworkers. And here's what I do know. When I let it stay around and I didn't get it out, I didn't talk to a professional, it started to show and people knew. And that's affecting my ability to help you. So I believe in therapy. If you're thinking about it, I want you to try BetterHelp. It's not just for people who've gone through trauma. It's great to build skills, to be the best person and professional that you can be. And BetterHelp is flexible. It's why I love them. It fits your busy schedule. It's online. And all you have to do is fill out a short questionnaire to get matched with a therapist. And you can switch among these licensed therapists at any time for no extra cost until you find the right one for you. So it's time to get help with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Ken today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ken. All right, four questions everybody wants an answer to. Who am I? What's my uniqueness? What should I do with my life? We're talking about a professional context here. Where can I do that? And then how do I get there? Four big questions. And this book right here, Find the Work You're Wired to Do, my latest book. This is a short read. You can read this in about 45 minutes, and it comes with the Get Clear Assessment, which has been a wildly successful product. And the reason I put them together is, so many people call the show and say, Ken, the assessment, it nailed me. It told me what I'm good at, told me what I enjoy doing, the type of work, and it showed me what motivates me, but I'm not sure what choice to make, specific professional direction. And so I coached this on the air, so I decided to take what I do on the air of walking people through their results and going, how do we now see options and choose options? And this book now does this. Find the Work You're Wired to Do on pre-sale now. Comes out, when is that? Comes out May 7th, and you can pre-order it now. You get the assessment with it and the ebook plus an assessment and the audiobook plus an assessment. So you get three books, three assessments, price of one. Unbelievable deal. I thought it was giving away too much, but Dave made me do it. So there you go. KenColeman.com. And hit the store, KenColeman.com, and hit the store. Okay, article here. We're on this leadership theme today because let me just rewind here. If I'm growing personally, that means I'm getting better. Skill, I'm getting healthy, more self-aware. I'm getting better as a person. That's going to lead to me getting promoted. And as I get promoted, I'm going to probably end up leading. And so I want you to win in each of those areas so that you can make the money you want and experience the meaning you desire. Get to the end of the journey, and I look back and I reminisce on what a great journey, not regret what I didn't do. Hello, come on. Who doesn't want that? Okay, so we're on the leadership theme today. because so many of you are under ineffective leadership, and some of you are in a process of trying to be an effective leader. Some of you are raising your hand going, I want to be a leader. And some of you just realize, I think Ken's right. As I keep getting promoted, I'm going to end up leading. And boy, I sure would like to keep getting paid. So here we go. This is the headline. Imad Mostak on why being a CEO sucks. So who is this guy? Well, he is the most recently removed, or he left on his own. He stepped down from Stability AI, an artificial intelligence company that he founded. And this is what he told the New York Times after stepping down in March. Being a CEO sucks. This is a direct quote. This reminds you of something I read recently where Elon Musk endorsed one of his friend's assessment of being a CEO as looking into the abyss and chewing glass. That doesn't suck. That's downright miserable. There's suck and then there's miserable. I think there's levels awful. Whew. Looking into the abyss, that means, oh man, I'm just staring into the infinity and beyond. Buzz Lightyear ain't there, and I'm chewing glass while I'm doing it. That's pretty awful. And so Elon Musk is like, man, I get that. Where are we at in America as it relates to CEOs and leaderships? And why am I even talking about this as it relates to leading? Very simple. We got people in the CEO position that don't know what it's actually about. And then that means they don't know how to do it. And so no wonder they think it sucks. Dare I say that we have a lot of CEOs who are on the wrong seat? And I'll explain that more in a moment. In February, CEO changes at U.S. companies jumped to 248. That's a 28% increase from the prior month. Whew. That's a big jump. And that's nearly a 50% surge from the year before. This from staffing firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. The number of CEOs who quit in February was the highest monthly total since they began tracking this turnover in 2022. Brian Chesky, who's the co-founder and CEO of Airbnb, I'm one of his clients, wrote on X, for me, this is in quotes, being a founder wasn't lonely. I had two great co-founders. However, the depths of loneliness I experienced as a CEO are difficult to put into words. This is what Elon Musk said about being CEO at Tesla and SpaceX. I rather hate it, and I would much prefer to spend my time on design and engineering, which is what I intrinsically like doing. Running companies hurts my head, but I don't see any other way to bring technology and design to fruition. Okay, stop. Okay, here you go. You know what you could have titled this? What Elon Musk Doesn't Understand About Leadership. I think this is your new title, Alex. How about that? What Elon Musk does not understand about leadership. You ready? And this is what I said a moment ago. I said, I'm going to get to this, that we got CEOs like Elon Musk that are actually, he's put himself, watch, Elon Musk, Elon, I love you. I'd love to interview you because I think you're brilliant. And I don't think anybody's had the guts or the insight to tell you what I'm about to tell you. I'm looking right at the camera, Elon, I think you're brilliant. But Elon, you're making a simple leadership mistake that many leaders have made before you. You, as by putting yourself in the CEO role, you have selected to sit in the wrong seat for your bus. Tesla and X would be better if you weren't the CEO, but you were involved in, I'm using your words now, design and engineering. Your words, Elon, which is what I intrinsically like doing. In this book, he should take the assessment, Alex. We tell Elon and others, talent's what you do best. He knows he's good at it. Passion is what you love to do. He said, I like design and engineering. And then he said, intrinsically, and folks, this is the nerd in me. The missional result in the Get Clear assessment is all about intrinsic motivation. The six results that you could get out of your assessment are all intrinsic motivators. This comes from psychology. Elon Musk is essentially giving himself advice in his own griping comment. And I'm not coming after Elon. Some of you don't like him. I got no problem with it. How can I say I don't like the guy? I don't know him. Now, if I interview him and he's a turd, I'll be the first to tell you. But I'm telling you, this is unbelievable. So Elon needs to go, wait a second. I'm really good at design and engineering, and I like it. I'm motivated by the results of design and engineering. So I'm going to be the chief design and engineer officer. Make up your own freaking title. You own the daggum company. But hire a CEO. It's that simple, Elon. You're the smartest guy in the world, and I just broke it down for you. Running companies hurts my head because he's doing stuff that he's not good at, that he doesn't enjoy. He's doing too much of it. But get him in design and get him in engineering, great. So listen, when you're the chief executive officer, you don't have to be the chief everything officer. You're the chief executive officer. Start delegating. Start hiring for the stuff that you're not good at, the stuff that drains you, and the stuff that doesn't excite you. It's that simple. So leadership is hard. Being a CEO is hard. It doesn't, and it should not have to suck. It shouldn't have to suck. You're doing it wrong. One other quick comment here. I think I got time. Let me look at my time. I got 1 minute, Alex said. Here we go. You ready? Here's another problem with being a CEO and why it sucks and shouldn't suck. Tim Cook, hello. 5 years after he took charge of Apple, said this to the Washington Post. I'm not looking for any sympathy. CEOs don't need any sympathy. Wrong. Tim, I get that you make a lot of money, and he's going, no one should feel bad for me because my life is amazing. Yeah, fair. But CEOs do deserve sympathy. When we don't give CEOs and leaders don't allow some sympathy for themselves to share with others that they're hurting, that they're struggling, that they're over their head, then they become lonely. When they become lonely, they become isolated. When they become isolated, they become ineffective. Leadership is hard. Doesn't have to suck. And I'm going to stick to that. I'm here to help leaders. It's pretty simple. Do what you do best. Hire and delegate for the rest. All right, rocking in the free world. I am Ken Coleman, here to help you win at work. If you ever want to get coached up, we like to do these coaching segments here on the show. And I'm always honored and humbled to talk directly with you. Ask at kencoleman.com if you want to do that. Let's go to Josh, who joins us in one of my favorite cities in the South, Savannah. Josh, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hi, Mr. Coleman. How are you?
I am living the dream. What are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm still at work.
So am I. What's going on?
Not too much, but so I've been in the military for 6 years. I'm currently in the Army.
Thank you for serving our country. You're a great American.
Awesome. Thank you for your support, sir. So I've peaked in my current career. I'm a UAV instructor, but I'm feeling kind of stagnant after these last 6 years. Over the last 2 years, I've served as a leader. I've been over 9 personnel at most at a time. I've been over several personnel in advisory and management. But like I said, I feel stagnant, and I have a little over 2 years left on my second contract. So my question for you today is that since I'm burnt out, how do I handle a transition out of the Army when this is all I've known?
Yeah. Well, first of all, just because it's all you've known does not mean that that's all you've done. And I think that's what I've talked to so many men and women from our military that think because that's all they've ever known, that's all they've ever done. Let me explain the difference. Yes, working in the military is all you've ever known. But describe for me just a second. Just give me 30 seconds. Just riff. Describe you what you do as a leader. Just describe it in your words.
It's a lot of individual guidance with people, helping them solve their problems, whether it's financially, personally, or work-related. I do a lot of teaching as an instructor. I show them how to do our job, specifically to fly UAVs, and just a lot of problem solving, I would say.
Yeah. All right. Now, with that fresh on your mind, great job. You know what I mean now when I say it's not all you've ever done? You can't say that the list you just provided is only military relevant. In fact, that list of things you just described, you can do that in the private sector all day long with your hands tied behind your back, with your brain tied behind your back. Am I right?
Yes, sir. I agree.
See where I'm going?
Yes.
It's all you've known, yes. But your skill and your experience is extremely transferable, yes or no?
Yes.
100%. There are a lot of companies, owners, leaders, who really respect the U.S. military. True or false?
True.
Okay. Do you think that those kind of people would be interested at worst, very eager at best, to get someone like you and your pedigree and your experience on their team? True or false?
That'd be true.
100%. I'm going to tell you right now. Listen, this is not, I don't want to make a blanket silly statement. But if you were up against another person for a management or leadership position, and let's say you were the same age and you had been in the field, been working for the same amount of time, my guess is on paper, at the start of the interview, someone with your background probably has a little bit of an edge just because of the reputation of our U.S. military forces. Do you think that's true or false?
I could agree with that, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's my point. Act like it. This is all confidence. Because you're a hard worker. You're going to put yourself out there because you're a man of character. But if you put yourself out there with some confidence, you're going to try for some things and go for some things that you wouldn't go for or try for if you didn't have confidence. Because you've got to get this narrative out of your head that I've never worked in the real world. Let me tell you something. The U.S. military is as real as it gets. Is this true?
Probably, yeah.
Come on, man. What branch are you in?
The Army.
Okay. What was the introduction to that like? I actually don't know, so humor me. What was the entry process into the U.S. Army like for you?
It started with a lot of paperwork and then a lot of sweat, a lot of long days.
Yeah, give me an example.
All in the words of training.
Give me an example of one of those first days of training. Give me a quick 30-second description.
First day off the bus, they, grab your bag, start running. A lot of yelling, a lot of push-ups. Mm-hmm.
How mentally tough was it?
Exhausting for the first while.
How physically tough was it?
Exhausting.
Hmm.
Draining.
What would you say is the value of learning how to lead in the U.S. Army?
It, like you said earlier, it builds up character. I would say I've learned a lot of discipline and respect from peers and leaders that I've seen over the years.
How do you think it's made you a better leader? When you come out, what do you think it will have done for you in your own leadership style going forward because of your experience?
I'd say it's definitely been enhanced and given me some ideas of what's good and bad in terms of leadership, what I would want to do for someone and for someone to do to me down the road.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is one of your most natural talents that you've turned into a skill in your time in the Army?
I'm not too sure what comes to mind first.
Sure you are. Think about it. You know what your natural talents are. Well, think about now where you sit. You've been in the Army for 6 years. What's a skill? What's one of your top skills now as a result of your, that's all you've ever done. So what's one of your top professional skills?
I would go between the teaching aspect and just human interaction based off speaking crowd work.
Great. So I'm going to call that. So let's call that instruction and communication. That sound pretty good to you?
Yes, sir.
Do you realize what I've been doing the last minute and a half?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm kind of doing a fake interview right now. And you're crushing it. See, I'm trying to help you see you got a story to tell. So all the stuff we just went through comes down to this. I've led people for 12 years or 4 years or so. You've been in six. You got two more. Am I getting that right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I've led in the U.S. Army for 8 years. Here's what I've gotten really good at doing as a result of my training and then my actual duty as a leader. I've gotten really good at instructing people on how to do it. I've gotten really good at communicating to people. And what I learned is I'm helping people on a personal level, not just what their orders are and what our process is. I've really gotten good at connecting with people. And so I've learned how to lead. I've learned how to do it effectively. Now, let's pause all this because I really wanted to fix the narrative in your head. Where is your head now as opposed to about 6 minutes ago? On confidence that you can come out of the Army and win in the private sector. Tell me the truth.
I would say I'm a few steps above. The way you've worded it, it definitely makes it seem more reasonable.
All right, great. Here's the rest of the thing. We need to figure out what it is you want to do. So let's just have fun. If I give you a job tomorrow, I rescue you from the Army. You're like, can I get out early? You're kidding me. I get to try this for 6 months and I don't have to commit to it for the rest of my life, but I know I'm going to win and I just get to try it. What would be something that you would try coming out today? I place you in it, making good money, doing it, winning. What would you try?
I've definitely been leaning towards real estate and aerial videography.
Great. Well, both of those require the ability to instruct, to learn, to guide, to communicate, to connect. Am I right?
Yes.
Well, there you go. So my gift to you is the Get Clear Career Assessment and the new book that comes with it, Find the Work You're Wired to Do. That's my gift. And I want you to really lock in on these two resources. Because right now it's all about you kicking the tires and just seeing what it is that you're interested in and learning what goes into that. And this assessment's going to help you know, okay, I'm wired for this. This is it. And this book's going to teach me how to then select and move forward and actually move into that next thing. Let's get started on it now. That's my gift to you because you're a great American. But you got this.
I appreciate that, sir, really.
Listen, you're a great young man. Most of this is in your head. He already knows what he wants to do. That's why I didn't spend any time on it. I knew that he knew, or at least he had an idea. This is The Ken Coleman Show.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.